Isn't that it?
All right, Wine, I'm going to start. So tell me if we're working.
All right.
All right, guys, we are back. This is episode 153. And this is Optimus Fields. And we are doing a special Euro time to accommodate our awesome guest today. But before we get into that, guys, let's get you guys acquainted with the block height. We are at 739,897. The Moscow time is 3,292 sats per dollar. And the current Bitcoin price in fiat caca terms is $30,000 and 410 fiat shitcoin dollars. So, Wine, I guess before we get into it, will you do our magical ad reads?
Yeah, sure. Who do we got today?
We got the same thing we always got.
The same old ads, huh? All right. Well, we'll start it off with our favorite daily Bitcoin show, Simply Bitcoin. They are the favorite Bitcoin drug dealers around. Inject daily fails into your bloodstream with Coin Icarus. Snort memes with Optimus Fields and light up the daily news with Nico. Yes, Simply Bitcoin will give you that Bitcoin fix that you look for every day.
That might be the best one yet, Winekiss.
And what's next? Oh, if it isn't our favorite website, opensourcememes.com. Fund a Bitcoin memer, not a Bitcoin dev. They steal all the donation money. Yes, devs write all these lines of codes that only a few people can understand. But with a Bitcoin memer, all you need is a picture and an insult. Fund a Bitcoin memer today at opensourcememes.com.
Wine, you are really getting better at those ad reads, my friend. I feel like I'm
getting better, but I get more nervous because I keep promoting to not fund open source development, and we have people like Matt O'Dell on and Pierre Rochard, and now Gigi has to hear it. So I know that they say Bitcoin is time, and that is what you're known for, Gigi, but we're really sorry for wasting yours. But thank you for being here.
Bro, open source memes, nothing better than that, you know? Like, memes are more important than you guys realize.
Oh, Gigi, I think we realize it. I think what we like to do here is all about the memes. And as we say, we act highly regarded on purpose because we realize not everyone can get the Bitcoin signal in the Think Boy classic, college professor way. So we come out here and have a good time. And like Wine said, I think we might waste your time, bro. But we will get into Bitcoin is time in the future. But first of all, I really want to just give you a shout out, Gigi. I love everything you do, all your work, man. It gets so cosmic. It every time I read something, every time you have a pod, I have to go listen to it because I know that, like, you're going to inject me with that cosmic Bitcoin perspective that I wasn't getting from someone else. I'm going to get my mind blown in 2 hours. It's going to feel like a psychedelic trip while I'm watching a podcast. And, dude, I'm a huge fan. I know I met you at I think it was Miami 2021. And, dude, I was surprised you weren't in the Green Man suit because that is how we all know you look like, Gigi. So, will you give us the origin of the Green Man suit?
Yeah, sure. So, the Miami Heat is to blame that I didn't wear a suit when we met. It's terribly hot. Like, I made a huge mistake with the green suit. I'll tell you that. The origin was that I always wanted to do just audio only and remain faceless online and so on. And more and more podcasts decided to switch to YouTube and just, have webcams shoved in everyone's face and so on. And so I was like, okay, what can I do? And I
I talked to some people, and I actually liked Rockstar Developer's setup. He just uses a silhouette of his and some green screen trickery to remove the background and so on. And I looked into some, I mean, Yellow does something nice as well with the puppet and so on. And I wanted to do something similar, but it turned out that all of that shit only works on Windows, basically, which is a non-starter for me. And so I had to get creative, and I saw that very, very cheaply you can get a full bodysuit that has the same color as a green screen. And I was like, okay, I'll get this for $10 and I'll see if it works, and I'll see if it's stupid or not. And it turns out that it was incredibly stupid, but it worked too. And so I became the floating sunglasses guy, I guess. And yeah, I never changed the setup since. So that's the origin story.
Amazing. Yeah,
Gigi.
Bro. Oh, go on.
We wanted to know if you're actually wearing the suit right now.
I have to disappoint you guys. I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. So it is green though. Both of it is green though. So there is at least that.
Well, Gigi, as you know, I'm now part of Simply Bitcoin, and I have to go on the show every Sunday to be on Monday. And bro, literally, I have this view. You know, in the Batman, when Bane, he's like, no one cared until I put on the mask. And I swear that's the same way, dude. No one cares until you put on the mask and you tell them you're not going to know what my face is. You're just going to know what the message is. And that's my favorite part about wearing the mask. It's not about me. It's about the message we push. And I think that's the most powerful aspect of the Gigi Green Man look. It's not about you, man. It's about the ethereal cosmic Bitcoin message that Gigi can channel from the ethers, man. It's beautiful. I fucking love what you're doing, dude. But
yeah, it kind of became a thing of its own, and so the green suit now has its own life, completely apart from whatever I intended. But it's still, every time someone that doesn't know me well, always the conversation about the why and the privacy idea behind it comes up. And I love it just because of that. And I will, continue to not show my face just to get the conversation about privacy going every time, because I think it shouldn't be the default. Like, if you're doing something online, just, you know, scanning in your passport and, showing your face in high definition, I don't think it should be the default. I think I really like still how it is kind of the default in the gaming world, that everyone has, like, a very, non-permanent fluid game attack, and no one knows where you're from, basically, you can change it at any time. And I think I really like this idea of a prismatic and fluid identity online. I don't think we should force any real identities into cyberspace. I think it doesn't work that way.
Beautiful, man. Right when you're speaking. So, like I said, recently I've been getting some shit. Everyone's like, dude, dox yourself. You're on Simply Bitcoin. That's the price you're going to have to pay. And I was kind of leaning towards that. And now I'm like, man, Gigi's right. I think I'm going to stay as the man.
You muted yourself, Optimus.
Oh my God. Wrecked. Anyways, Gigi, are you the same person under the mask that you are while wearing the mask?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I think other people have to answer that. I think in general, yes and no, I don't like the idea of having one single identity, for example. I think that identity is prismatic, and I think that everyone knows that. You know, you're a different person when you go to church than when you are at the strip club or at work or what have you. You know, like, it's...
You have to see your at church.
Not sure how many churchgoers are here, but, you know, Bitcoiners are increasingly becoming churchgoers, so I think that the example is fitting. And so I think in general, when I talk about Bitcoin, I think I'm the same guy with or without the mask. But obviously, you know, like contrary to popular belief, I don't like Bitcoin isn't all of my life, even though it is like 95% of my life. But I still have, you know, some normie conversations, for example, and then you know the things I talk about and the personality is probably slightly different.
I actually had a question along those lines because we know that you're a German-speaking person, and what are we missing out on with German, Gigi? Like, is there even more incredible content that we just won't be able to grasp as English speakers?
I think so. Yeah, I think I would. I mean, that will sound terribly pretentious now, but I encourage everyone to study other languages, to study the history of money, for example. And it is pretentious because I only speak German and English, so my knowledge is very, very limited. But there are some nuggets of wisdom hidden in the German language, and I'm sure it's in other languages too, and in Latin too. I mean, most people know the tidbit that the term salary comes from the money that was used back at the time in Roman days, which was salt. And so having someone be worth his or her salt is where salary derives from, and where the saying derives from as well. And there is a lot of this stuff in the German language too. And some other examples in English would be, of course, you know, the gold standard or a silver lining and those kind of things. And in German, the term for debt, for example, is the same term as sin, kind of, you know, like that's not exactly the right translation, but there are some interesting things that you can learn from the language alone that show how much history and truth is embedded in the linguistics itself. And for example, the word for money in the German language is Geld. And Geld means it came from canceling outstanding debts. So if you pay with money, if you pay with Geld, then it gilts, which is German for then it's final. So it points towards final settlement and those kind of things. And I think just for that alone, it's worthwhile to study other languages and other cultures, because the truths that are embedded in the sayings and in the words that we use and in the language itself, they all point to the same truth, you know, like they all point towards what we learned over thousands of years, like what hard money is and how money is different from debt and those kind of things. And for that alone, I would encourage you to study German and learn German. And of course, you know, some of the greatest Austrian economists, they were Austrians, of course. And so they were writing and speaking in the German language as well. And so it's very worthwhile if you want to read the originals. And there are even some books that haven't been translated yet. So all of that is very cool.
I got it. So the best way to orange pill somebody is to make them learn German first.
Exactly. Step number one, learn a different language.
Beautiful. Well, Gigi, I have a question. It's a little segue, but Wine asked the perfect question for it. And I go back and forth on this. I got Shishi in the crowd, so maybe he'll jump in a little afterwards, because I know you'll get Cosmic. But me and him go back and forth all the time.
Mute. Unmute.
Dude, why is it muting me?
Wrecked.
All right.
You're getting censored.
Yeah.
I always get very nervous because I think my internet fell off, but it's just you muting yourself. So
it's muting me. Anyways, me and Shishi always go back and forth on the best way of orange pilling normies. And I always want.
You're muting.
Wrecked.
Dude,
again.
It's muting me. All right. So, Gigi, you have one of the best cosmic shills. Do you hit normies with the cosmic shill up front, or do you slow roll them and give them, like, you know, the Bitcoin basics, and you try not to scare them away? Because sometimes I realize I just go straight to the deep end, and I see their eyes as glass over, and I'm like, yeah, well, we'll get them next time. And I went too far on it. So do you hit them with a strong cosmic Bitcoin shill, or do you kind of ease them into the deep end?
Yeah, no, I I used to try all different kinds of things, but some of you might know I wrote a letter to friends and family, dear family, dear friends, a letter to all of you that still don't have Bitcoin or something like that was the subtitle. And I published this, I think it was 2 years ago, a little bit more than 2 years ago. I don't know, it's rather old in Bitcoin time. And ever since I published this, I stopped orange pilling completely, basically. So I also did my best to not speak to normies anymore. As I said before, like 95% of my life is Bitcoin only. So I don't have to orange pill really anymore. And I think it's just kind of the information is out there and everyone has to put in the work themselves to orange pill themselves, kind of, you know. It's the old idea of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And so I feel like if you're still ignorant about Bitcoin, it's mostly on yourself and your privileged position, probably. And with all that being said, I still make some exceptions from time to time and try to orange pill people. And I usually take it very slow and act as if I have no idea about Bitcoin. That's a lot of fun. I think the very cosmic shill can work too. I really like what Eric Kaysen has been doing the last couple of years, where he just full on straight with a straight face and 100% seriousness will tell you that Bitcoin is the second coming of Jesus Christ, and just, you know, like, this will leave a lasting impression. So I think that works too, but you have to decide yourself, depending on the person that you're orange pilling, what route to take.
Yeah, we're huge fans of the Eric Kaysen cosmic shill. That might be one of our favorite Bitcoin shills. But to add on what you say, dude, Gigi, I'm 100% with you on the same page. Now that we do the podcast, we put out so much content. There's so much good content that, like, I haven't been orange pilling anyone.
And you are the worst producer in the game.
Yeah, dude, the worst.
Hey, guys. Before you guys give me shit, this is Twitter muting me. This is Twitter muting me. I'm not touching this, guys.
Yeah, let me ask the question to Gigi. How do we get Optimus to stop throwing ones at at church like it's the strip club?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's still too shitcoin heavy if he has many ones to throw.
Correct.
Wow, Shishi. Throw me under the bus. Jesus. Yeah, guys, so I apologize, but my spaces is acting regarded AF. So, Wine, it's not me, but you might have to do some heavy lifting tonight.
You're saying I have to speak? That's
dude, you
got to
do a job. You got to do a job. Well, before we get too far, though, Gigi, you touched on a great, great topic of the power of language and using correct language and the power of memes. And I have this theory that memes and what we do over here is simply us casting spells on the normie brain. So, as you know, in the American language, when you spell a word, it's called spelling, to cast a spell. So, Gigi, as a wizard yourself, what do you think on this topic? Are you casting Bitcoin spells on the normies out there when you speak on these podcasts?
Oh yeah, definitely. I like to think of it in kind of the same way. I did not make the connection with a spell. That's really nice. But I always say, when people ask me what I do, if they know about Bitcoin, I usually say that I'm writing code and words for Bitcoin, which is true. And I consider both of these things programming. You know, in the one sense, I'm programming machines and I'm writing actual code that will hopefully be useful for Bitcoin and the Bitcoin ecosystem. And on the other hand, I'm writing words, and that's just wetware programming. So programming brains, in the sense. And yeah, it's I think, you know, it's memes all the way down. So basically, you know, the largest, most powerful memes become religions, and your whole worldview is based on these. And so I think very much like, I don't really believe in misinformation in a sense, let's put it like this. I don't believe in censorship. I think the only way to fight bad information is by supplying the world with more good information and with better, more accurate information. And I think the same is true for memes, you know, like the funny thing about memes is that only the good memes, only the funny memes, only the true memes will survive and multiply and will propagate themselves. Like the shitty memes, that's why shitcoiners can't meme, you know, like there's no truth in it. And why also politicians can't meme, and like all the retarded people can't meme, basically. And so I love the idea of basically letting the market sort itself out, and you know, it's truth based at its core. And so what you're doing is exactly right. You're programming brains by spreading the best, funniest, most truthful memes there are. And so yeah, just keep doing what you're doing. It obviously works.
Why? And that's when you hit him with the horns, bro. Come on.
All right, I got something better. Hold on.
Yeah, listen. That's called motherfucking bars.
Let's go, man. I know. Twitter Space. Yo, literally, as I say, I know Twitter Space is trying to wreck me, but GG's still giving you guys the hot fire. Wow. All right, GG. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter lately about the inevitability of Bitcoin. In your mind, is Bitcoin inevitable, or are we just being way too bullish about Bitcoin and we need to put in some more work?
I think most people are not bullish enough. So, yeah, I truly think that most people are not bullish enough. I mean, Bitcoin is way, way bigger than Bitcoin Twitter. That's what most people don't realize. And so many things are happening all over the world. Also, you know, the world is a very big place. Bitcoin Twitter is very US and Euro-centric, but so many things are happening all over the world, both in, you know, like in those parts of the industry that you don't really see because people can't be loud about it, but also in the developed countries where people are, you know, they have different, like larger fish to fry than being on Twitter 24/7. So I think in general, people are way too bearish. And in terms of inevitability, I think I don't necessarily think that Bitcoin is inevitable in the sense that if everyone would be 100% apathic towards it and just would stop caring, then I don't think it will be inevitable. Like Bitcoin has a symbiotic relationship with humanity, and I think it's borderline inevitable because I think that the truth is more powerful than all the lies of the world, and I think good is more powerful than evil, and I think that it's the most potent tool that we have to course correct humanity. And I think more and more people are realizing this, and I think that understanding Bitcoin and getting into Bitcoin is a one-way street. It's understanding Bitcoin deeply is very much like a hash function. Like once it clicks, it's borderline impossible to go back and understand how you viewed the world before you understood Bitcoin. And so the amount of Bitcoiners is only increasing, and the amount of very bullish Bitcoiners is also only increasing. And so I think we have the truth on our side, and I think we also have nonviolence on our side, which I believe is very important. Like Bitcoin is the only, because money was captured by the fiat system, Bitcoin is our only chance of scaling humanity in a nonviolent way. And so we have the truth on our side, and I always say we have love on our side. And the way I mean it is that people would be in Bitcoin even without a monetary gain, because they love the idea of not having to use violence to scale humanity and go towards the next step, so to speak. And so I think in that sense, the symbiosis between good people and Bitcoin makes Bitcoin inevitable.
So Gigi, you speak about violence and using state violence to scale Bitcoin, but that is exactly what, in my opinion, NVK and Cold Card are doing. So I was just wondering what your opinions on that are, on supporting FOSS, because I don't believe Bitcoin or FOSS is inevitable. Just like you, I think we have to put in the work, but just curious, you know, like how can we scale Bitcoin if, you know, all the best code is going to be, you know, uplifted by the community and then, you know, taken private, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think most people in Bitcoin and most people in software even don't know enough about the history of the free software movement and about the philosophical underpinning of it. And I think that free software, truly free software in the GNU philosophy, Richard Stallman's sense of free software, so no, not open source viewable or whatever, is terribly important and also like insanely important for Bitcoin. The example I always like to give is just look at full node solutions like Umbrel. If they some of these solutions had very weird licenses and changed them a couple of times, and with licenses with software licensing, it's very similar to encryption. You should not roll. For example, you can, like, let's assume everyone is running Umbrel, and let's assume that Umbrel has a really shitty software license, one that is just, you know, like Creative Commons for software or whatever. There are some really terrible licenses out there. You can view the source code, but you can't edit it, you can't repurpose it, you can't sell it yourself, you can't pass it on to a friend, and so on and so forth. And if that is the case, you make it very, very hard for users to change the like the software that they are running, and to kind of have a say. But it's also his right to, you know.
Fights for sure, but I definitely am the same. I'm on the same side of the coin as you, clearly. And so my next question is, when GG Wallet?
I fill my wallet all the time.
What do you mean? You lock yourself into a toilet, you flip a coin 256 times, and then you do some math. You don't need any fancy equipment.
I knew you were gonna say that.
There yes! You go.
Just call motherfucking boys.
So much sauce. So much sauce. Wow. I think if we had a little audio drop on YouTube, but hey, that's what it is. That's why you're in the spaces and listening. But man, so much good stuff there. One point I wanted to add before Chi-Chi went GG down the FOSS rabbit hole. Gigi said something that triggered something in my mind about Bitcoin being inevitable. And it was a quote. He didn't say it exactly, but it just came to me. And it's, as long as we stay obsessed with truth, then Bitcoin will be what we believe it to be. So that was beautiful, Gigi. I'd love it. But I also kind of got a different question. I know normies always ask the same question. And it's in the line of, is Bitcoin, or are Bitcoiners believing Bitcoin to be a utopian dream? Like, we just said a lot of awesome stuff, and I know this to be true. But for the skeptic out there, the non-believers, I know that we don't have time for the non-believers, but do we lean a little utopian in our Bitcoin visions of the future?
Yeah, I think we do. But I think I think the most hardcore Bitcoiners are aware that Bitcoin is no utopia. I really like the idea of Bitcoin just being nature, so to speak. You know, perfect competition and those kind of things. So I think at least it's not a dystopia, you know? Like, there's something to be said about having a natural system that is self-regulating and that has kind of the base conditions for prosperity to emerge. And I think that is Bitcoin. But it's not a utopia for absolutely everyone. I mean, in Bitcoin, laziness is not rewarded. Lying is not rewarded. Like not putting in the work is not rewarded. You know, like it's the truth is rewarded. And that's why we have proof of work, you know, like only valid hard work is rewarded. Everything else is dismissed. And I think a hard money standard is very similar. Like there are no, like Bitcoin is anti-bailout technology. It says so in the Genesis block. And so, you know, everyone who is reliant on bailouts will not be rewarded, and it will not be a utopia for those kind of people. But I think, you know, if you value honesty and truth and hard work and all the rest of it, then I think it can have utopian tendencies in the sense that these things will be rewarded and you will have a good life. So I think, yeah, I don't blame Bitcoiners for having utopian visions when it comes to a hyper-Bitcoinized future, because I think it is also very important to be optimistic about it. You have to be hopeful and optimistic about the future. Otherwise, like, why work towards it? You know, like, I think it is important to have this kind of optimism.
Beautiful. Couldn't have said it better myself. Man, I'm super excited right now, Gigi. But when you look out at the Bitcoin world, when you look at the landscape right now, when you're on Bitcoin Twitter, what excites you the most right now about the future of Bitcoin? What are you looking at, and what do you think people should be keeping an eye out on?
There's so many things. So I have a couple of things that I have my eye on. I think we are rather close to the next kind of stepwise function of not necessarily improvement, but like improvement / adoption. And so what I'm currently very excited about is the NFC on Lightning. Just having Lightning consumer friendly and very close to current experiences. It doesn't matter if it's like an app like experience or like just tapping a card or a phone on a payment terminal and so on. I think we're very, very close to this just working. And of course, you know, the closer you are to the tech, the more you will know what kind of things can still break. And, you know, we need to build out the Lightning service provider, the liquidity provider layer, so to speak. And there are a lot of scaling issues still to be tackled, but I'm very confident that we will tackle them in the next couple of months and years. And I think just having this experience, it like every time I show this to people, it's absolutely mind blowing to people that you tap your phone on you know, another NFC thingy, and you can just pay instantly, and it's easier basically than everything else anyone has ever used, and it's also instant settlement. Like that's what people mostly don't realize, that you know, there's no credit involved whatsoever. So I think that's exciting from the consumer perspective. Another thing that I have my eye on is related to infrastructure inversion. So the way I think about this is I'm waiting for Bitcoin's voice over IP moment. So there was a time at the internet where, you know, some service providers flipped a switch, and then everything that was a phone call via regular lines before went over the internet, and no one really noticed. You know, you probably got a new phone like 6 months before or something, but you didn't really notice that anything changed, but everything in the background changed, and everything was routed via packages and so on. And I think this will happen in the bank settlement industry as well. This is still, it will still take a couple of years, and we'll see who is quicker. If there are like the next generation of neobanks that have kind of Bitcoin native financial rails embedded in them already, or if it will be old banks switching to the new system, we'll see. And the third thing I'm really excited about is the energy sector and the merging of the energy sector with the Bitcoin mining sector. And I think Marty said it beautifully, where he was like, you know, it's obvious that these two sectors are going to merge. It's just, again, a question of who's going to be first? Will Bitcoin miners become energy producers, or will energy producers become Bitcoin miners? And I think it will be a little bit of both. And so those are the things that excite me the most. On a purely technical level, I think there's still a lot to be done, both on the scaling front and on the privacy front. So I'm excited about some protocol upgrades. I'm excited about some kind of scaling plus privacy proposals, just like Fedimint or Minimint. And yeah, I'm excited about everything that's going on in Lightning. I think I'm still blown away by Lightning, that it actually works, that it actually scales the way it scales. I know it's not the silver bullet for absolutely everything and bringing 8 billion people on board, but I still think it's absolutely amazing that it works. And of course, you know, how could I forget to mention it? Podcasting 2.0 and streaming value, I think that's just ingenious. So I absolutely love the concept of streaming sets and people just being able by you know, spinning up a node somewhere and clicking some buttons, launch a podcast, receive value from anywhere in the world, and you know, receive fractions of a set every second. And it's so beautiful. Like I think people have no idea how much this will change the world, this thing alone.
Yeah, Gigi, you touched on so many good topics there. The energy sector, of course, I've been seeing that lately, watching that, and it's so bullish. It's so inspiring to see Bitcoin miners just going everywhere and tapping into stranded energy. It's a beautiful thing to watch. But you talked about the value for value model, and we're huge on that. We love the value for value model. We integrated the ZBD streamer kit, and it allows people to troll us live on Bitcoin Kindergarten, and it makes the show way better. It brings us back to our glory days on Discord, where you can just troll us while we're doing our show. But I really love that article that you released recently and the phrase that you talked about on setting value free. And I think it's a pretty good segue that we're talking about how Bitcoin miners are setting energy free and Lightning is setting, you know, content creation or value free. And I love how you're able to stack these memes on top of each other, and you just build, you know, like a memetic library for people to just go back to these memes and be like, oh yeah, this is why I do what I do, and it builds on the last meme, and it's just a chain of memes, and then you end up a Bitcoin maximalist.
I'm telling you, it's memes all the way down. Like that's how it works. But in terms of the value for value stuff, I think I think everyone kind of knows that the internet is broken in many ways, and a lot of things just don't make sense. And I think a large part of it is because of the monetization model of the internet, which is advertisement and just selling user data and spying on everyone, basically. And what's so interesting about selling information, like a blog post or a podcast or whatever, is like it's you're not selling a physical thing, so the cost of reproduction is zero, and so in my mind it doesn't make sense to really sell it, and so what I love about the value for value model is like you said, you know, it sets value free because it turns everything on its head, that the consumers themselves, the consumers of the information, have to decide, was this valuable for me, and if it was valuable for me, how valuable was it? So if you read an article that really blows your mind, or you watch a movie that moves you to tears, I think people are willing, not only I think, but the data shows that people are willing to pay for this. And it's like you just ask them at the end, like very much like you know, street performers do it. The street performers, they perform anyway. If someone is busking, like the music doesn't stop, but just because people are not paying. But if people really enjoy it after the fact, they know instinctively that they have to throw a couple of coins in so the music continues and other people can enjoy it as well. And I think it's a way more honest way of monetizing information online. And I think it's something that really works and really scales. And the thing about the internet is like the internet is basically forever, almost, you know. And it also scales way bigger than like a town square or something. So I switched everything I do to a value for value model, I think mid of last year or something like that, or October last year or something like that. And I get micropayments like every minute, depending on the format, you know. Like I have some podcast streams, so to speak, where money comes streaming in, where satoshis come streaming in, and it's like it's fractions of a penny, of course. But I think we are so insanely early that I don't mind that it's that the payments are very, very small. The fact that it works and the fact that people are doing it blows my mind. And the same is true for switching written content to a value for value model. Like, for example, my book, before I even knew about the value for value stuff and what Adam Curry was building up the last 15 years, I decided to release my book as open source because I was like, it's stupid to not do this. You know, everyone should be able to read it. It's like it's a long blog post anyway, so why put it behind a paywall or anything like that? And so my book was always on GitHub and available to read for free online, both in the written form and as an audiobook. And people actually give money if they enjoy it. They actually do. And I, just for the written content alone, I get payments every day as well, and they are not necessarily micropayments because it's not abstracted away yet by software like Albi or stuff like that, but people actually click a button and decide, hey, that was worth like $20 or $50 or what have you. And so the model absolutely works, and people are still super, super skeptical, and I can understand that, but I think it has the potential to completely invert the whole advertisement business online and actually set value free, because there is no value limit. You know, if you're a billionaire and you really like the book or a movie or an article or whatever, you might give this person like $5,000. It's jump change to you anyway. And so that's what I mean by setting value free. And because you're not limited by market forces to be able, like, you don't need to be profitable like you are producing a physical good, because you just need to eat and you need to have a roof over your head. And if whatever comes in is enough, that's like everything else is a bonus. And I really, really like this idea, and I can't wait to see where it goes in the future. Again, I think we are like insanely early when it comes to that.
Beautiful. That might have been one of the best value for value talks. Yeah, give him the horns. Wine's in the YouTube chat going, oh, what would you say? We are street performance, lol, from beggars to street performers. So you have upgraded us in a matter of 1 minute, GG.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we were homeless on the internet here, and now we're juggling things for people to send us sats.
Juggling memes.
Oof. Hit him with the horns. Wow. Let's go.
Okay.
Dude, juggling me. All right, guys. Well, I know Gigi kind of has a short time span today, so I have a few more questions, guys, but I'm going to open it up because we are about hitting the 45-minute mark, and I know there's going to be some questions and some comments, and I'll let this go a little bit, and then I'll close it out so that we don't take up too much of Gigi's time. Jim, you jumped in. Mano, I'll get you next.
Yeah, hey, guys. Hey, Gigi. What's up, dude? Glad you could come to our crazy kindergarten class that we try to teach every week. I wanted to get your take on, your philosophical take on a perspective I've had for quite some time, and it goes back to what you guys were speaking about before, is Bitcoin inevitable? I actually did a talk at BitBlock Boom last year called Bitcoin is Inevitable and I Can Prove It. And so my thesis goes like this. There are first principles in this world, like gravity, and you can ignore them all you want and they will still act on you anyway. And those are natural first principles. Things like the temperature, you know, rain is gonna make you wet. Whether you wanna believe you're not wet, good luck, right? So these principles, they act on us regardless of our knowledge of them or our attitude towards them. You can only align with them and get through this life. And then I thought about it a little more, and there are these other principles that seem to cause us as humans to do certain things, like visual principles, like the orientation of imagery. There are certain things that catch people's eyes, and there's universal rules in photography that seem to align with that, as there is in music and in taste. And so they're sort of physical, but there's a lot of subjectivity involved with that kind of stuff. And then you get into something like concepts that are part of our humanity, like truth, which we, of course, align with in Bitcoin, but trustworthiness and honesty. These are types of first principles that when we align around them, life gets better. And then there's money. Money is a thing we built. It's a construct. It's not natural, and it's not necessarily just in our heads because we made it into physical things. But the concept of money, I would argue, has become a first principle of humanity that without it, we would not have all the productivity and the division of labor that we've experienced and all the benefits that that brings to us. And I would say that Bitcoin being the best form of this construct of money, a first principle adopted and built by humans, is being refined in real time. All the things you've been talking about being tweaked, but always knowing that it has to align with the way we want to be. This whole value for value model, it's so much more in alignment with honesty and truth, because you get to decide after the fact, and it's very personally subjective. And that just hits on all the right elements of our humanity and getting along with people. And this is my big picture. This is why I'm in the game here. This is why I can't stop talking about Bitcoin, because I think this matters at such a fundamental humanity level. I believe you do, too. I just wanted to hear your feedback on my perspective. Thank you very much.
Yeah, believe it or not, I actually watched the talk you gave. I made
Oh, thanks. I did terrible because I did not practice and I didn't, not enough anyway, and I went overboard. But thank you very much for giving me the time. Your time's very valuable. I appreciate that.
I have some things to say. Like, I very much agree that there are base reality is basically what you can't argue about. Like, your opinion on gravity doesn't matter. If you fall down a 10-story building, you're dead, basically. You know, like, that's reality by definition. It's like, doesn't matter what you believe, it's there. And I think the more abstract the concepts get, the kind of, by definition, the further removed they are from reality, but they still are real in the sense that if you ignore them, you will have trouble. And by having trouble, I mean always you're gonna die. Like, if you lie all the time, you're gonna end up in prison or you're gonna die. If you're not trustworthy or not upright in your businesses, same thing. You know, like, people will kill you literally. And so I think we kind of have to recognize that what we try to do, I think, as humanity, the last couple of thousand years or tens of thousands of years, is to build up these concepts. And I think the ones that have been around for a long time are the ones that map closest to truth. And I think that's why all major religions will land on things like, you know, truth and love and beauty and those kind of things. You mentioned beauty as well, you know, like, there are these rules in photography and painting and so on, you know, the rule of thirds, and you have your Fibonacci spirals and all those kind of things. And so there is beauty and symmetry, for example. And I think we should not dismiss this. These are very truthful and important concepts. And I think you're also right in saying that money is, I wouldn't even say it's purely human, you know, like Brandon wrote about this as well, Brandon Quidham, that there are some networked organisms, mycelium first and foremost, and other like networks that pass nutrients around. They will come up with something that is similar to a monetary token, where, you know, they pass something around that they themselves don't actually need, but it will act as an intermediary. And I think you always need money in complex systems. Another great example is, for example, the Google Translate AI. They switched a while ago from a very brute force mechanism to a machine learning mechanism, where just you feed it all the data and it figures itself out the translations. And this AI came up with like a meta language. So it will translate whatever input language you give it to a meta language that we don't understand, that is just an abstraction that maps to all other languages. And you need money, and you need these intermediary things to fight off combinatorial explosion, because mapping every good and service to every other good and service, it doesn't work. You always need the intermediary step to mapping it to one thing, and then mapping this one thing to all the rest. And that's how you solve the problem, or the very real mathematical and physical problem of combinatorial explosion. If you would not do this, for example, trying to map all goods and services of humanity to every other good and service of humanity, like try to pay for, you know, a Thai massage in like nails, for example, you know, like or in wood, it doesn't work. Like, even if you have the perfect AI and we're able to build the perfect supercomputer, the hard disk of the supercomputer or the processor of the supercomputer, depending on how you build up the algorithm, would collapse into a black hole. That's how big the numbers will get, you know, like that's what combinatorial explosion means. And so I think there is deep truth in the fact that if you want to do something complex, you always need something that is, you know, to use economic language, that solves the double coincidence of ones, that solves this combinatorial explosion of mapping all the inputs to all the outputs. And so there is no coincidence that humanity itself, like the complex networked organism that we are, came up with the concept of money. And what's even more fascinating, I hinted on it when we talked about the German language, it's not clear what came first, if money came first or language came first, because both money and language co-evolved. And I think it's absolutely right what you said, that Bitcoin is the best money we ever had. And I don't think it's clear yet what this will do to humanity, because just imagine like a 10x language upgrade. If we would land on a new language where we could express ourselves very, very precisely, and where we could do away with all misunderstandings and those kind of things. And I think Bitcoin is that, but not for the literal language, but the language of value. And so, I mean, John Vallis explores this at length when he talks about how Bitcoin reorients people and how kind of transformative of a psychotechnology it is. And I truly think, like, money, very much like numeracy, is a psychotechnology, or like learning different languages. If you're well versed in money and in Bitcoin, your brain will work very, very differently than it did before learning this skill, so to speak. And it's very much like if you learn Mandarin, your brain will work very differently than before you learned Mandarin. And the same is true, you know, for painting, photography, and what have you. So I think there is a lot to be said about all the topics that you touched on. And so I would encourage you to give this talk again in like a year or two from now and see where we are.
Well, thank you very much for that. I considered writing it all down and seeing how long it is, whether or not it's just an article or a small book or something, because I think of so many ways to use natural and man-made examples to help support the case that this best form of money is going to improve so many things. I love the way you ended what you just said, because this is why I believe Bitcoin is going to fix the world. Every person that tunes in changes. I don't believe there's a single person that understands Bitcoin and the significance it has beyond number go up that can say they aren't changed. I don't believe that's true, because it profoundly changes our perspective on all the other things around us and how they intertwine. And I never had the thought pattern that to describe what you and I just discussed before I understood how money actually works. And I didn't understand that until I learned about Bitcoin. And so because of its first nature principle in the way we act with it, I believe that as it gets better, as people get tuned into it better, every other thing around their life will get better. Their time preferences will lengthen, and the world will become a safer and happier and more logical and normal place. And the crazy, crazy bullshit that's going on in society about men being able to get pregnant and have menstrual periods. This is, you know, come on. This only happens when everything about society is distorted, that people can't find truth. You know, that's one of the most absurd things, you know, men competing against women because they're calling themselves women. Come on. Now, this is not a reality. There's physical differences. Come on. Like, whatever. I'm sorry. I don't mean to go off, but like this is what a good money that aligns people around truth, that forces people to become more honest because they can't cheat and get away with stuff, especially the people we call our leaders, but whatever that might be in the future. But once all that gets corrected, most of the bullshit goes away. There's always going to be somebody who wants to cheat, somebody who's going to lie, and somebody who's going to try to scam, but they'll get caught so much quicker and easier. And I just think the damage could be way less. It can't be worldwide like when you got governments with nukes that can just do what they want because they print their own money. Anyway, I digress. There's plenty of people that probably have questions. Thank you for letting me come up. Gigi, super stoked you came, dude. You got such a great perspective on so many things. And thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Of course, of course. My pleasure. And as a last thought that kind of fits in here, I completely agree. And I think it's like I completely agree that Bitcoin has the power to fix the individual. And if it just fix every individual, like you end up fixing the world. Like that's how it works. I think that's also, you know, like that was the conclusion of all major religions, kind of. And it's interesting that this fact about Bitcoin gets completely ignored by basically everyone who's not a full-blown Bitcoiner. You know, like mainstream media will never talk about this or has never talked about it, as far as I know. Everything gets drowned out in the noise of crypto and number go up and all the rest of it. And I think that there is some you know, some beauty in that as well. We have a full-blown you know, like a full-blown worldwide revolution. And Eric Kaysen talks about this as well, you know, the hidden meaning in the word crypto, that it is all out in plain sight. And people are talking about it very, very openly, you know, like how Bitcoin saved them, how Bitcoin changed their life, how, you know, they even, you know, had religious experiences because of Bitcoin or got more religious because of Bitcoin. And of course, you know, all the very obvious things of lowering your time preference. And what I think is not often talked about is that Bitcoin also forces you to become way more responsible, not only way more responsible in your spending and in your lifestyle and so on, but also literally you have the responsibility to hold your own keys. And if you're serious about Bitcoin, you also have the responsibility to run your own node, because no one can tell you what Bitcoin is. You have to decide for yourself. Bitcoin is a very personal, very individual thing, you know, like even with, especially like that's the way that the system works. Like we saw this with Taproot, we saw it with SegWit. You have to decide what Bitcoin will be in the future and what it is now. And you have to verify yourself. And that puts the responsibility on you. It puts the individual in the center again. And no one talks about this, you know, in like all the psychology professors and all the rest of it, they should be, you know, studying this phenomenon like 24/7, but they don't because it's hidden in all the noise. And I think that's just very funny. And all the while, like the longer this is ignored, the stronger the whole kind of human side and the psychological side of Bitcoin will grow. And I think we're already past the tipping point when it comes to that. I don't think that Bitcoiners can be stopped worldwide.
I think of it as like a sick body healing itself, right? The signals have been corrupted because of a bad diet. The world has broken apart and broken down. And now proper nutrition is getting back into the system. And as you alluded to before, like Brandon Quidham's piece, the network is able to talk to each other better because all the nodes are able to recognize the nutrition they need, the truth that they need. They can validate themselves. They don't need to check with somebody else if they don't want to. It's all open. And so just like in the human body, all the cells take in what they need and reject what they don't. And the Bitcoin network is aligning people around this truth in money that's causing the world to talk to itself in a new, a better, upgraded, improved language, one that's being fixed by proper monetary nutrition, right? I mean, like, damn, this goes deep, but this is like literally what I see in your words. I'm picturing like, wow, the world's healing through the network. The nervous system is communicating better because the synapses are getting repaired because the nodes are talking to each other and they're coordinating. Oh man, this is fucking exciting, man.
Isn't it wild though? It's very wild, I think. And it's also the thing is that there are so many things that play into this because it's give me a second. I think I'll have to mute myself. It's really loud here. Give me just 1 second.
No worries, Gigi. We have a great comment in the chat by Zorn, and he goes, "Welcome to Bitcoin. You are about to get unfucked. GG, probably." TLDR by Zorn. Guys, we are pushing up on the hour mark.
And Gigi did tell us he has a time constraint. So I think I might have to just ask one more question when he comes back so that we can respect his time and roll this one out. But hopefully, Mano, yeah, I see your question. If you have a quick question, you can for sure jump in, as long as it's a quick one.
Oh, that depends on Gigi. Yeah, but
yeah, okay. Go ahead. I'm still good for like 15, 20 minutes or so.
Oh, that should be a walk in the park for you. Okay, so I've been asking this question before to others, but I think, you know, reading most of your articles, you're an interesting one to ask this one in particular. So, you know, I'm a Bitcoiner, I believe, like many of us. And I think, you know, that the direction that this whole transition is going is of replacing the current monetary system. I do think a lot of people would also agree that the chance that this can be quite a painful exercition is quite real, and the chance is quite big. We just don't know how painful and how it's going to be translated. In that context, I was wondering if I could ask you, and if you could elaborate, because I think there's like a correlation between the speed of the adoption of Bitcoin and on the other hand, the pain that comes with it. Do you feel that, you know, this adoption, the adoption curve of Bitcoin, that things can go, things are able to go too fast, and that maybe the elements of this let's say new world that we're living in, and let's say all the let's call it side effects, like, you know, shit coins, whatnot, like one would feel, you know, to just express frustration on all these things that are going and are easily to be considered wrong, but at the same time, if this is what stops the adoption of Bitcoin going too fast, then there actually is quite an interesting role for these, let's say, bad elements. And I was wondering what your take is on that.
Yeah, I very much agree. I've said multiple times in the past that my biggest worry is that everything is going to happen too fast for the reasons you outlined. I think both the world is not ready for hyper-Bitcoinization, and I also think that Bitcoin is not ready yet. I hope that it's like, it depends on your time measure. I think it's already happening. I think we're in the midst of Bitcoinization, and it will inevitably lead to hyper-Bitcoinization. My timeline is kind of unchanged. I think, you know, in 2029, we will have something approximating a hyper-Bitcoinization event. It will probably be just a fiat system failing, basically. And, you know, the rest of the things that have the means to do so just fleeing into Bitcoin. I think the adoption will continue to happen as it did with all the crazy people first. In the very beginning, it was just insane individuals. Like, you had to be absolutely insane to go into Bitcoin very early on. And now it's insane countries and insane companies, you know, like you have MicroStrategy and you have El Salvador and so on. And I think it will, as Bitcoin grows, I think Bitcoin's biggest hindrance to adoption is just its size still. There are so many pools of capital that cannot go into Bitcoin yet just because Bitcoin is too small. So once we hit these thresholds, of, I don't know, like 10 trillion or 100 trillion or what have you, then more capital will flow into it. And so adoption will continue to come in waves, I believe. I'm not too afraid anymore that it will happen all too quickly, because a lot of the capital can't even move that quickly. What can happen quickly is that some parts of the fiat system fails. But even that, like I talked to Saifedean Dean quite a bit about this, and he wrote about this as well in the fiat standard. The fiat system is kind of more resilient than it would seem at first glance, and so I don't think it will fail all at once. I wanted to say something else too, but I kind of lost my train of thought. I think the beauty about Bitcoin is that everyone is free to save themselves. That's true for individuals, that's true for companies, that's true for countries. And Bitcoin will always be there for you, and you can always opt into the new system and avoid the pain. But I also think that a large transition like this, like the pain will come. And we've seen this in the past, like two similar transitions. I mean, there were multiple. just with the Gutenberg printing press, for example, a lot of people suffered a lot of pain because of this. With the internet, the same thing. Like if you're the New York Times or any big, newspaper, the internet wasn't necessarily good for you. And same goes for Blockbuster and all the rest of it. And so I believe that we will see similar dynamics play out, just probably at a bigger scale, maybe a little bit quicker than it was with the internet. And I think maybe even also a little bit more painful because, well, you know, money is different than business models, kind of. So I think a lot of people, a lot of countries maybe even, and a lot of banks and those who are wedded to the old system will suffer the pain the most. And the reason why I'm doing the things that I'm doing mostly in the education department is to hopefully, you know, show some people that Bitcoin is there and that they can use it and they can use it, that the individual can use it for its own benefit. Like, I really hope that as Bitcoin grows and as our collective understanding of Bitcoin grows, that more and more people will, you know, start to save in Bitcoin and consequently save themselves.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Thank you. One last quick question, Geeky. I know your DMs are blowing up. I'm interested in translating your articles into Dutch. I think there's a need for it. Can you please check your DM so you can help me on my way?
Yeah, of course, I will. And just for the record, if you go to my website /translations, there gg.com/translations, everything you need should be there. Like it's all published under a Creative Commons license. So just read the license and go nuts. Like, and everyone can translate my stuff always.
Beautiful.
So Gigi, sorry,
Hold on, Gigi.
Okay.
How long? Is this a quick one? Because we gotta let Gigi go. We're pushing the time, and we gotta wrap this one up, bro.
I was gonna do the old keep him here, crack it hour special.
No, yeah, we can't today. Not today. Not today.
No, it's a quick one. But if you guys want to wrap it up, I'm cool with that too. I'll see Gigi somewhere around this world.
Right.
There is one important question that we need to ask Gigi before he does go, and it is, what's your favorite Bitcoin meme?
Oh man, there are so many good ones. It depends on the time frame. One of the more recent ones, so to speak. I absolutely crack up and lose it every time I watch Interstellar Sailor. Like, that's the best thing ever. Like, the Interstellar Sailor clip is one of my favorites. But just from all the memes that ever existed up to now, I still love the Matrix one. I think the most, where he simply goes, once you're ready, you don't have to, you know, like you don't have to change back to fiat. And I mean, there's so much good stuff. I made the mistake. Someone asked me this question once, like 1.5 years ago or 2 years ago or something. And I mentioned that I think the porn memes are very hilarious. And so after I said this, for 2 months, everyone was tagging me in porn memes and DMing me porn memes. So I'm not saying I regret that, but that was my previous answer.
Dude, how did you not use your soundboard? There is no second best.
Well, you don't know that my soundboard is acting up on me. So we're having all kinds of
there's no second best, today. Laura.
So, Gigi, before you, actually, no, Winekiss, did we get any comments, any memes?
So weirdly, the country I'm in, ZBD wallet doesn't work, and I'm too scared to switch my location right now. So I can't really read any of the memes, but I saw one that said, juggle these memes, and there was another one by Zorn, so shout out to Zorn sending us some tips. Yeah, but today's shit posting as a service brought to you by Labra Hoddle, who can't make it today. It's not really a thing this week, so.
Right. All right. Well, GG.
Mute.
Mute again.
Oh my god, this is killing me. Give the people where they can find you. Actually, we have one more question, a quick one. When 21 Ways book, GG.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I am so behind on my time plan. so when it's done is the answer.
Soon. That's all you have to say. Soon.
That's all you gotta say.
2 weeks. 2 weeks, TM.
What's coming first? 21 Ways or 100K?
Oh shit. Oh shit. I don't know. I'll have to flip a coin. I don't know. Probably 100K.
Bullish. The people your tag, and then we'll roll this one out. Your Twitter, your website.
Yeah, my I'm DergGigi on Twitter, DergGigi, and edit.com at the end, and that's my website, and that's basically it. You'll find everything there.
Beautiful. All right, guys. Well, there we go. Well, we love you guys. This has been Optimus Fields at Bitcoin Kindergarten with my co-host Weinikis. We usually do this every Wednesday at 9 p.m., but we made a special time for our European guests. So maybe we will do some Euro time zones again. It seemed to be kind of popular. I see some guests in here that we can get on board. So maybe this will be a thing. So guys, thanks for joining us in our spaces.